Welcome to Bible Study for Progressives, a show where moderates, liberals, and leftists of all faiths and ideologies come together to discuss scripture, spirituality, and politics. We engage scripture in its historical context, plumb its depths for wisdom and guidance, and apply its lessons to current events and social issues. Whether you're a liberal evangelical, a New Age spiritualist, a social justice activist, or a postmodern theologian, there's something in this show for you. Come, be energized in spirit and mind to understand the Word and what it means to be a spiritual person in today's world. This is Rich Procida. If you've been following me or this program, you will know that I've been fighting to save our democracy from Donald Trump since the Mueller report came out. I've been concerned about Trump's continual refusal to comply with the law and legal norms, including refusing to honor congressional subpoenas and failing to comply with court orders to return children taken from their parents. He encouraged police brutality, stoked racial and political division, spread disinformation about COVID-19 and mail-in voting, cozied up to and idealized dictators like Vladimir Putin and Kim Jong-un, and disseminated Russian propaganda about Hunter Biden. To protect democracy, we must defend the Constitution. If we allow a criminal to get away with violating the law, he will do it again. After Trump encouraged Russia to conduct espionage against his political opponent, he did it again when he tried to get the president of Ukraine to announce a sham investigation against Joe Biden's son. If he wins, he will launch investigations against his political opponents and, in effect, begin a purge of anyone who speaks out against him. You can see why he is a threat to our democracy. Trump has refused to commit to honoring the results of the election. Like anti-democratic foreign propagandists, Trump has attempted to undermine public confidence in our democratic process. During the debate, he refused to condemn white supremacists and instead called on them to stand back and stand by, implying that he may need them if protests break out when he tries to steer the election to the Supreme Court, in the expectation that conservatives on the court will side with him and overturn the will of the American people. The Republican Party and the courts have enabled Trump's refusal to respect the rule of law and will do so again if the opportunity arises. I want to prepare people for what may be coming, just like I've been sounding the alarm that President Trump's unlawful conduct and corrupt practices are a threat to our nation. I want to prepare the people in the event that the election is close and Trump tries to steer the election to the Supreme Court by claiming that mail-in ballots are fraudulent, the most likely scenario should the election be close. So I found this article in Politico entitled, "A Day-by-Day Guide to What Could Happen If This Election Goes Bad," by Garrett M. Graff. I want to go over the possible scenarios should things turn ugly. Then I would turn to a discussion with Lynn Mystic Healer about what we can and are doing about it. Politico surveyed constitutional and national security experts about potential problems with the election and what people are doing about it. Thankfully, there are many aware people on the left and in the Democratic Party who recognize the threat. Congressional Democrats have publicly called upon the military to respect the peaceful transition of power. 80% of Americans fear the election will not be free and fair. Many are concerned about violence, especially by militias and white supremacists. So groups are practicing de-escalation and preparing lawyers, poll monitors, poll workers, and even poll chaplains to ensure that everyone who wants to vote can safely and comfortably vote, and that every vote be counted. The good news, according to the article, is that the U.S. election is relatively resilient and guided by strict legal procedures. The fact that our system is decentralized, being conducted by the states rather than centrally by the federal government, makes it nearly impossible to rig a national election. This should give those seeking to eliminate the Electoral College pause. Sure, a majority of people voted for Clinton and for Al Gore, for that matter, yet both lost. But we will never know how the election would have turned out had the candidates been forced to conduct nationwide campaigns. Furthermore, there are plenty of other reasons why Clinton and Gore lost, not only the Electoral College. Not the least of these is the Supreme Court, who handed the election to George W. Bush by a party-line vote. They did it before. They can do it again. Clinton lost because Keystone cop James Comey presented with a box full of duplicates. Officially reopened an investigation against Clinton on the eve of the election. Finally, changing the Electoral College would require that we amend the Constitution, a process that takes years and even decades. We should instead be thinking about what we can do today and not be obsessed with something that will take forever and may not even be the root cause of the problem. The nightmare scenario, as Stanford Law professor Nathaniel Persily points out, begins with the early states not being decisive, making the absentee vote in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin outcome determinative. We will know within 4 hours of the polls closing whether we are in the danger zone. Within hours of the polls closing, or even before the polls close, William Barr's Justice Department might seize on real or imagined voting irregularities to launch investigations to support Trump's false narrative that the election is illegitimate. We know that Trump has been pressuring Attorney General Barr to begin investigations of his political opponents. There are reports that Trump is threatening to fire Barr and FBI Director Christopher Wray for failing to investigate his political opponents. More than 1,000 Justice Department alumni from both Republican and Democratic administrations have signed an open letter saying they fear the Attorney General intends to use the DOJ's vast law enforcement powers to undermine our most fundamental democratic value, free and fair elections. Given Attorney General Barr's demonstrated willingness to use the department to help President Trump politically, the media and the public should view any election-related activity by the DOJ with appropriate skepticism, they wrote. Many Democrat and liberal groups are training people to de-escalate situations, document irregularities, and protect voters. Leftist activists are ready to act should Trump claim victory prematurely, try to shut down vote counting, or claim fraud to steer the election to the Supreme Court. We already have rallies planned for November 4th, the day after the election, just in case Trump attempts to have the results of the election overturned are discarded. Go to protecttheresults.com to find an event near you. Armed right-wing militia, brainwashed by deep state conspiracies and right-wing propaganda, may interfere in the election. We already know many plan to show up at the polls to intimidate voters. This threat of violence is particularly acute in Michigan and Arizona, who have ongoing histories with these groups. North Carolina and Pennsylvania are less at risk, but poll watchers must be prepared in every state to protect voters from intimidation and violence. Once street protests begin, they will not stop until Trump or the Department of Justice ceases its interference in the election. Trump may use the protests to justify a heavy-handed federal crackdown using his hand-picked federal police, or call on his right-wing militias to rain down violence on the protesters, stoke fear among the population, and create confusion about the election. Thankfully, the article says, state and local officials have strong legal foundations to confront and shut down such groups and gatherings should they choose to do so. Mary McCord, a former top national security official at the Justice Department, examined the nation's anti-militia laws and how officials can confront armed groups. She said her main concern is that Trump, who has already shown a willingness to stoke violence and division, might actually encourage the violence or respond with violence. She says, I hope people wake up and agree we don't want to be a failed democracy. Everyone, athletes, religious leaders, business leaders, state and local leaders, have got to speak up and show that the vast majority of people don't want armed conflict. By 7 p.m., on the East Coast, on Election Day, we will have a good idea of how the election is playing out. Did Election Day itself unfold smoothly? Were there disruptions? If there were they in battleground states? Every voter standing in line at poll closing time has the right to cast a ballot. If there are long lines, voting may go on late into the evening. Voter suppression is a serious problem, particularly for people of color. No one should have to stand in line for hours to vote. There should be more than one ballot drop box in large counties in Texas. While we should expect some glitches, we must make sure that minor irregularities aren't hyped into larger ones in order to justify interference by the Justice Department and appeal to the Supreme Court. Once polls begin to close, the questions will begin to focus on when we'll see a result and whether President Trump will accept the results. Democrats are worried about what political scientists call the blue shift or the red mirage. Early returns may appear to show Trump ahead. Trump could try to declare victory before all the votes are counted and then cry foul if the final vote count doesn't favor him. Trump could also put pressure on states to shorten their counts. He might try to provoke an antagonistic or violent reaction in an attempt to precipitate a law and order crisis so he can respond with the use of force or declare martial law. The worst case scenario is Trump sending his shock troops into the street, beating and killing protesters while the military stands by, not knowing what to do. We have no guarantee that either the military or the court will step in to stop a violent crackdown. News and media sites are taking steps to suppress any premature claims of victory. Many news outlets have committed to be careful and slow in making predictions. Facebook will prohibit post-election victory ads on election night that are not supported by independent assessments. Twitter is preparing to label tweets that claim an election win before it is authoritatively called. Still, some activists worry that social media continues to be ripe to be weaponized by bad faith claims of electoral victory. I want to be clear that I don't believe the above scenario will play out. I believe the election will be a landslide and Trump will be unable to spread confusion or steer the election to the Supreme Court. At the same time, there is still a path to overthrow our democracy through the Supreme Court. This is Trump's and the Republican Party's preferred way to overturn the results. So we must be vigilant. I estimate a 30% chance of either of the above scenarios coming to pass, because there's at least a 30% chance that the election will be close enough for Trump to take advantage of the uncertainty. This is still a high degree of risk, given that the stakes are democracy or civil war. Unfortunately, Trump plans to appeal to the Supreme Court if he can. After all, the court handed George W. Bush the presidency on a party line vote. If there are major legal fights or post-election challenges about vote counts, it's almost certain that such disputes will end up at the doorstep of the Supreme Court, writes Graf. Amy Coney Barrett's confirmation means that the Republicans have a decisive 6-3 majority on the court, three of whom are Trump appointees. Trump has already made clear that's what he wants. I'm counting on them to look at the ballots, definitely, Trump said. Our only hope at that point is Chief Justice John Roberts. He has worked in recent years to preserve the appearance of neutrality, even siding with the more liberal justices on controversial issues. He would be under immense pressure from both sides in any post-election court cases. My hope is that we know early whether Trump has any chance of winning the election. North Carolina and Florida are key. Both will likely report results relatively quickly on election night itself. While tight race in Florida could delay the results, early victory for Biden in either of these states could indicate a Biden win. While a Trump win in these states wouldn't foreclose a Biden victory, it would likely mean we are in for a long period of uncertainty. The longer the uncertainty, the greater the risk that Trump will steer the election to the Supreme Court. Election officials could be hit with multiple problems this year, from cyber attacks to the possibility that complex state rules about absentee ballots might invalidate tens of thousands or even hundreds of thousands of ballots. In South Carolina, there's already likely to be confusion and ballot challenges around the state's law that absentee ballots be witnessed. The policy had been suspended, but the Supreme Court reinstated it. Of course, absentee ballots were still being sent out with incorrect instructions. In Pennsylvania, media and election officials are racing to educate voters to put their ballots inside a secrecy envelope, or they will be discarded. Election officials had tried to suspend the rule but lost a court fight against the Trump campaign and the Republican National Committee. Officials in Pennsylvania, a state Trump won in 2016 by just 44,292 votes, fear that this could lead to 100,000 discarded ballots. That's likely to affect not just the presidential race, but tight congressional, Senate, and gubernatorial or legislative races as well. States like Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania will likely to be slow to report results due to laws that prohibit the processing of absentee ballots before Election Day. Nevada will likely be slow to count their mail-in ballots, too. If it's unclear on election night who won, the nation may have to wait for the ballots to be counted in these battleground states. During that time, there will be court battles and an appeal to the Supreme Court becomes likely. It would be a major tragedy for this nation should the Supreme Court discount the results and hand the reins of power over to dictator Donald Trump. Trump has attempted to throw a wrench into the gears of American democracy. He has refused to commit to a peaceful transition of power, has implied that he will refuse to concede the election, and has hinted that if he wins, he plans to run for a third term in violation of the Constitution. He has already falsely claimed that millions of illegal votes were cast 4 years ago. He is committed to contesting every ballot he can as a way to undermine democracy and steer the election to the Supreme Court. At the same time, many Americans have been primed to think that the election will be illegitimate. Their minds have been slowly and insidiously poisoned over the last 4 years by the spread of QAnon, a quasi-religious Republican cult of falsehoods, elaborate and improbable conspiracy theories, and outright absurdity that has so captured the GOP's base that as many as 5 Republican congressional candidates have espoused support for it, writes Graf. The article points to other forms of interference in our election, too. Officials have issued warnings about possible cyber attacks. Iran and Russia have carried out some attacks already. While foreign hackers will probably not be able to hack into voting machines, they could create uncertainty by disseminating propaganda that says they did. Hackers might instead target news organizations or state election websites to make it appear that a losing candidate actually won. Russia attempted this in the Ukraine by placing fake results on Ukraine's Central Election Commission website. They could spread disinformation online, making it appear that voting machines have been hacked. The goal is to undermine the people's confidence in the legitimacy of the outcome. Trump could amplify false claims about the election and use such disinformation to cast doubt on the election, launch investigations and court challenges, and even refuse to certify election results. The ultimate goal of foreign actors and of the Trump administration, coincidentally, is to undermine America's faith in democracy. Barton Gellman, writing for The Atlantic, reported that Republicans and the Trump campaign are discussing contingency plans to bypass election results and appoint loyal electors in battleground states where Republicans hold the legislative majority. With a justification based on claims of rampant fraud, Trump would ask state leaders to set aside the vote and exercise their power to choose a slate of electors directly. These loyal electors would then vote for Trump over Biden, regardless of the vote count. This plan, the article points out, is unlikely, but the fact that the Republican Party and the Trump campaign are considering it is a damning indictment of Donald Trump and the Republican Party. It's a bold-faced fact that Republicans, as well as the Trump administration, are anti-democratic. Democracy is America's legacy. To be undemocratic is to be un-American. Our most cherished values, the very heart of our nation, the Constitution, and the American way of life are all threatened by an anti-democratic and authoritarian regime and Republican Party. We must defend the Constitution and fight for democracy if we want to live in a free country. The 12th Amendment outlines what happens in case of a tie, or if the winner dies prior to Congress certifying the vote. In these cases, Congress chooses a president. This is known as a contingent election, and it hasn't been used for the presidency since 1825. All the same, Nancy Pelosi is preparing for such a fight, but it is unlikely to ever come to this. If the election is close, Trump will have already steered the election to the Supreme Court, and the Democrats will lose. This is why it's vital that we moderates, liberals, and leftists vote, and vote for Joe Biden. We must win early and in a landslide to prevent Trump from undermining the outcome of the election. We must refuse to accept an illegitimate outcome and resist the overthrow of our democracy. To this end, we must reach out to the middle, make people aware of what's happening, and participate in actions to protect the results. We must refuse to cooperate with an illegitimate regime, and we must be prepared for a national strike should Trump, the Republican Party, and the Supreme Court attempt to overturn the results of the election and install Trump as president against the will of the American people. If Trump is allowed to overturn the results, he will solidify his hold on power, purge Congress and state houses of those disloyal to him, and establish absolute control over every federal government agency. He's already installed his cronies in high places. I don't really have to tell people of color and women what's at stake for them if the misogynistic and white supremacist in chief wins another term. What I need to do is make people see that Trump's flaunting of the law and legal norms, disrespect for our social and democratic institutions, and his racist propaganda and authoritarian aspirations are a real threat to democracy. Our freedoms, civil and human rights, the welfare of our nation, our national security, the environment, healthcare, racial reconciliation, and life on earth are all at stake this election. We cannot place a man of low moral character in high office, or we will be ripped off, exploited, and abused. There is no perfect candidate, but there are evil ones and evil parties who no longer serve the will of the people, but only serve their own pocketbooks and the interests and industries that pay them. Is this the end of democracy in the United States? Is this going to be a huge setback for democracy around the world? It's an unfortunate reality that 30 to 40% of people are so ignorant or morally corrupt that they will vote for dictatorship. It's up to the rest of us to make sure that doesn't happen. Make sure to vote, and then come out into the streets afterwards to demand that every vote be counted. Now let's turn to my discussion with Lynn Mystikeeler.
Everyone, thank you so much for taking time out of your obviously bizarre schedules right now that are just getting more bizarre all the time. And this division has to be, we got to get our USA right and left together. It's like the right and left part of the brain. A guest speaker today is Rich Peseder. Thank you so much for being on the show again to come in and talk constitutional lawyer, yes, and Bible studies for progressives. How's that going? Are they getting it?
I want to thank you, Lynn, for having me on your show. And Bible study for progressives, you know, I've been trying real hard to get it out. I've been really surprised listening to people that they don't seem to truly understand the gravity of the situation. Maybe they do because we've got tons of people going out to vote, and more people may vote in this election than have voted in previous elections for a long time, and that bodes well for the Democrats. So you mentioned that we need to get through this left-right divide, and in this situation, we really do need to reach out to the center, that the center is our target. It's not a battle between the left and the right, the extremes, but we need to bring the center in if we're going to survive this election, if a coup were to occur, which is kind of what people are talking about, what to do in a coup.
Yeah, but see, the problem is, and that's the biggest problem, that they still are the dark, I'll just say a lot of the evil ones, the intention, they don't understand the power of our thoughts, the power within, the God within. We're all made in the image of God, right? Didn't Jesus say that, right?
I think the image of God, I think Jesus said it, but that comes from Genesis. Human beings were created in the image of God. And what that means, or at least what early Christians felt that mean, was that we have been designed and have the ability and also the right to govern ourselves. So it's about government.
Yeah. So what do you think? How can we go about this? Getting heart and soul community services, good basic income with health care, talk about health care, and why we need them, right, instead of more armed forces with the basic income, place to live, and health care. How can we work together and do that? What do you think, Rich?
Well, I was thinking about this just this morning, about how 2,000 years of human civilization, from the ancient world at least, and we have still been unable to solve the basic fundamental problems that have existed for 2,000 years. Poverty, inequality, injustice, war, all the problems, caring for the poor, the needy. All these problems existed 2,000 years ago and still exist today. Now, there has been progress, and people don't recognize how much progress we have made in eliminating poverty and hunger, or at least eliminating hunger, but we still have those fundamental problems 2,000 years later. I'm afraid there isn't really much hope for humanity. But one of the reasons I say that, though, I mean, after 2,000 years, one would think that we would have these problems nipped in the bud, but we don't. And
we didn't know, though, Rick.
Well, we had the Bible. We've had solutions for a long time already. It's not like all of a sudden now we have these solutions that we didn't have before and didn't know about. We do have different techniques and different things, and we have improved in many areas. And in some sense, some of these problems are fundamental. So maybe in some sense, we can look at them as core problems that need to be solved and solved and solved over and over again, that they're going to be just there. The main thing is that we don't have the political will to solve them. It's not the problem that we can come up with solutions. The problem is that they're not getting done. And some of the solutions, maybe they aren't as powerful as we think they are, but I think the main thing is that we don't have the political will. And in fact, the game is to divide and conquer. In fact, if we look at, there are four keys to beating a coup, to overcoming the overthrow of our democracy, to resisting dictatorship and authoritarianism. And the first one is widespread mobilization. Those in power do not want the people unified. They do not want to overcome this left versus right. But I think the problem we're facing is corruption. And that's...
Well, hate
first
and
of all,
evil. Hurt intentionally hurtful
evil.
People. How Christian is that?
Right. Yeah, people have talked about the human heart, but I think that we tend to view things as rising from within. Like, that's different from saying the truth is inside you. But to say that racism is something that comes from the human heart, it rises up from below. It's part of the human condition. All these groups, whether they're Democratic Party groups or third party groups, many of them are corrupt. In other words, the organizations are structured in a top-down way with the leader, usually a narcissistic, sociopathic leader at the top, with a whole lot of levels, and at each level it looks differently, so that what the groups are saying they're doing is not actually their objective. And I can think of a group recently that I've been involved with, and their objective, they say, well, they're against fascism, they're trying to fight Donald Trump, they're trying to reach out to people and build a broad-based coalition, and that's what they tell you. But that's not what their goal is. Their goal is to collect people, create a following, set themselves up for some type of advanced taking of power, both power and money. So they can gather a following, they can get money that way, they get power that way. They're not trying to create a broad-based movement. They're trying to create a cult of people who are willing to do what they want them to do. Jesus is the one in the Bible who takes the Jewish customs and traditions of loving your neighbor and extends them to loving your enemy. So while there may be a trend in the, or sort of things in the Bible that would suggest that we should also love our enemies, and there are, it wasn't actually until Jesus's words, or at least the words attributed to him in the New Testament, that we get the concept of loving our enemies. And what that really means is providing for their needs, healthcare, housing, shelter, food. That's what loving your enemy means. It's the Good Samaritan who stopped to help a person by the side of the road who was in a culture that there was a lot of prejudice against, but still, that's what loving your enemy means. So what we need to do, and what we've been incapable of doing because of the manipulativeness of our leaders and the system that elevates sociopaths as opposed to people of compassion and light workers to positions of power, such as Donald Trump. Our system elevated Donald Trump. The corruption of our political and social institutions and the church not really being what they say they are. And then people being so easily manipulated by propaganda, and then also not only easily manipulated, because some people can be fooled and manipulated, and we all are to some degree or another, but there's also a willfulness in it. In other words, we can focus on the economy and jobs and think that that's the basis for why we should vote for people, but really ignore what our government does to democracies around the world, on torture, on murder, killing, to allow for that to happen and to not speak up. This Comey Barrett right now, and I think there's a little bit of hopelessness and inability to do anything about it, but such hypocrisy on the part of the Republicans. In other words, expediency, their own goals, their own purpose. There's no sense of morality, truth, consistency. So I want to go over these four keys to beating a coup, because it's at the center of it is what we brought up at the beginning, which is overcoming this division. How can we have widespread mobilization where we're welcoming broad sections of society across political parties, expanding the we and inviting the center to fight for democracy? How can we have alliance building beyond the left and progressive groups and building broad alliances with popular organizations and institutions if we're constantly divided between Christian-hating socialists, Christian nationalists, Christian Nazis? Right. How can we have this
what
division?
What kind of weird label is that? I mean, good God. What now?
Right. Yeah. We're constantly in battle between progressives and neoliberals. We're constantly in this struggle, in this conflict, and a lot of the tactics that are being used are specifically designed to cause this conflict, particularly Marxist tactics. They want to throw us up against each other.
Absolutely.
That's how they think they can broaden a movement. I mean, the whole idea of defunding the police, well, that was a tactic to cause conflict. Before that moment, we didn't have a conflict. Everybody knew that what happened to George Floyd was wrong and something needed to be done about it. But what the Marxists wanted to do was draw a battle line. How do we stop drawing battle lines and start working together? Because these divisive tactics and the propaganda that comes with it is not what we need. They're part of the problem. And this is where it comes down to basically,
yep,
the division is part of what's keeping the country divided and keeping those in power in power. So whenever you get the groups coming out and wanting to cause division, they are helping, they are supporting the status quo. I want to get through these four keys. So the first one, widespread mobilization. Second one, alliance building. And the third one, nonviolent discipline, tactics that minimize harm and make it harder for violent right-wing groups to attack. These tactics that speak to broad sections of a society and allow for popular participation. And then finally, the refusal to recognize the illegitimate authority, demanding that every vote be counted and only accepting the results of a fair democratic election. And so by refusing to recognize legitimate authority, that means we don't do what they tell us to do. We don't allow them to govern. Let's talk about strategy, because if we want to make change, we need to have some sort of strategy. And what Choose Democracy and other groups are talking about are, let's sort of imagine or put a framework around the system. What's holding up the current regime, or if there's a coup, what's holding up the status quo? And there are seven things that are identified as pillars of power. These include business, politicians, the military, the media, the judiciary, police, and bureaucracy, or government workers. So in each of these pillars, each of these institutions or groups of things, there needs to be resistance to the regime. Businesses, the structure of the system, which is held up. In other words, if we have a coup, and I'm still talking about a coup, and how are we going to bring down that coup, that government, that regime? How are we going to bring them down? And the first thing we need to recognize is, well, what's propping them up? What's holding them up? And it's these seven or eight things. And at each level, I mean, we need to not cooperate with the regime. We need to not respect their legitimacy. We're going to need to resist an illegitimate regime, an undemocratic regime. Let's not pretend that
No, we need democracy for sure. I'm into real democracy.
Yeah,
but at the same time, like I said, the voting, right now we're struggling, and thank you for being on the call. It's just because the voting even, we've got to take over a lot, you know, get with different groups for bringing in heart and soul community services, good basic income, health care for everyone, universal, and a basic income to do good. We just, I mean, to me, I just got to get that out there. We're almost done. Okay, Rich, what else? Is there anything else? Anyone? Heart and soul community services. This is for everyone. It'll change everything.
Well, yes.
Anyway, anything else real quick? Do you want to give information out that you're working on or contacts or anything?
Yes. So obviously my show, Bible Study for Progressives, I write for laprogressive.com. My name is Rich Procida. And also look up Choose Democracy. On the day after the election, there's plans for possible actions being made. You can host an action. You can make sure to make plans. We need to all be prepared and to make plans in the event that there is an attempt to overthrow our democracy. There is a path to the overthrow of our democracy through the Supreme Court with the newly installed Justice Barrett.
But we have to go now. I guess our time's just about up. Oh, Jesus, just such a wild time.
For a general strike. I'm saying prepare for a general strike. Be prepared to go out into the streets. Be prepared to resist. Be prepared to not cooperate with the regime. Be prepared just in case. And I don't think this is going to happen. I mean, I'm hopeful. We've got a large voter turnout, and people are not so stupid as to not see what's actually happening in front of their faces, but they're not fully aware. This is what being asleep means. This is what being spiritually unaware means, is not knowing what's actually happening. And Trump will try to overthrow our democracy, and we need to be prepared in the event that he does that. Unless we can really wipe him out in the election very early, he's going to try and steer it to the Supreme Court and try and overthrow the election, discount the mail-in ballots, not count votes, engage in voter suppression as they've been doing. And if people can't see what's actually happening right now, then this is a population of people who are blind and asleep, and we need to wake people up and prepare them for what's
right on. Source of Wonder, everyone, go on it. It's Event Now or humanitiesteam.org or the other ones that are happening, charterforcompassion.org. Anyway, I love you all. Thank you so much. Rich Procida, thank you so much for being on my talk show today. I've been through a lot of stuff and lately. And thank you so much for tuning in today, everyone. Big hugs, lots of love, and thank you. Bye now.
This has been Bible Study for Progressives. If you enjoyed the program, please subscribe to our podcast or put us in your favorites and write a 5-star review. Tell your friends about us and share us on social media. Follow us on Facebook and click the donate button at modernlectionaries.blogspot.com. Your support will help us reach more people, produce more and better shows, and cover the cost of production. Feel free to send me a note or comment on the show. I would love to hear from you. Until next time, this is Rich Procida. Thank you for listening.